Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
What's good, internet? It's Monday, June 8th, and you're listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 320. Is that right, or is it 319, Kato?
319.
I'm your host. I wrote 319. I just didn't trust myself. I'm looking at 319. I should have gone with it.
Yeah.
I'm your host, Austin Walker. That was the voice already of Ricardo Contreras. Also joining us, Gita Jackson.
Hello.
And Rob Zachney. How you doing, Rob?
How's it going?
It's going. It's good. It's not, you know. It's going. It's fine. Everything's fine. I'm exhausted.
Right?
It's fine. It's been continued to be a long couple of weeks. I think
What's it like in Queens right now?
Fine. It's fine. I see a person walking past the block. I'm looking out the window. It's sunny. Queens is small. Queens does not have protest energy in that way. There was a protest in Astoria last week. But it is not Brooklyn. It is not a destination the way Manhattan is, where you're like, yes, let's go there and have a protest.
Right. Yeah.
I'm in a more dense part of Queens, but lots of Queens is almost suburban in places.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
So it's a different vibe for sure. But you know, it's fine.
You know, that's still fine.
How are y'all doing? How were your weekends? Y'all get up to anything interesting?
Yeah.
Yeah, I certainly did also.
God, we can't. You can't serve up that slow intro of a play and be like, here's a segue, that underhand chop.
Thank you, Rob.
And then just everybody stares at it as it rolls in the dirt. Toot your horns,
maybe
people.
I would open for other people to have had a nice weekend, okay? Did you have a nice weekend, Rob? Did you do anything interesting?
I watched my friend stream for justice.
Boom, got him.
Okay. This weekend I was on Count'em, three different fundraiser streams. That's right. A hat trick of fundraisers.
Wow.
One of which I helped organize. Trick. Yeah. On Friday I was helping out US Gamer. I was in a segment with Abby Russell and Ben Pack from Giant Bomb. You might know those guys.
They do know those folks, yeah.
Yeah, we played, honestly, what should become part of the rotation for everyone's party games that they're playing with their buds, golfing with your friends. Which is described to me as track mania, but it's golf.
Oh, that's a great pitch.
Yeah, it's just this wacky game where it's like mini golf style with a lot of really weird courses. And you all play it once and it's just janky enough that it becomes like a hilarious nightmare. We had such a problem. I was really bad at this game. It was really fun to play, though. Like, if you watch the VOD, which I believe is up on YouTube because we were just streaming to YouTube, so check out US Gamer's channel. There's just like a lot of parts where everyone stops like bantering and we all just yell, "No! No!" like a full minute. God. That's really, I really, really like
this.
We played a spaceship, an outer space themed course, which had all these like gravity and wind obstacles to do. It was super fun.
So the way this game works is, I'm looking at it, I'm asking, sometimes it looks like you're directly controlling this golf ball.
You are directly controlling the golf ball. You are hitting it, right?
You are hitting it. Okay.
You are selecting the direction.
It's like mini golf,
and the
to be
force.
Clear. It's like mini golf with like very absurd mini golf courses. Is what it looks like. Okay.
Yeah. The one in space, there were like conveyor belts and moving platforms and black holes that sucked in the ball and would just shoot in a random direction.
Okay.
The pirate ship one, which we tried next, has a whole bunch of stuff. You can get the balls to, so it's, you are controlling them because if you click, you can make the balls hop, like jump in water.
Okay.
So you could use like the surrounding water to get to the hole. In fact, there's a time limit for each hole, but on one of the holes, and the pirate themed course, we ended up all just kind of hopping up and down in the water and running out the clock.
Great. So that is the way in which it is like Trackmania, is like everyone is constantly trying to get to the hole. It's not counting strokes. It's counting time, presumably.
Or no, it is also counting strokes.
Good.
So fantastic. Then we had a lot of like 18 over par like situations. It's like very, 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 it's hard. Like these courses are hard. It's what makes it a perfect party game is that it's chaos. One, everyone's doing it at the same time. Two, the courses are actually pretty difficult. So if someone manages to get par or under par, even we were even like clapping for bogeys and double bogeys, which is like a one or two over par. And like that's sincerely impressive. And nobody ever feels bad, or at least playing with this crew, no one felt bad. Because, like, we all were struggling, and if anybody
managed to That's the first thing I've heard that makes it sound not like golf.
No one not felt
the
bad.
The spaceships
were like, oh, so that's how it's a game.
Yeah. No one felt bad. It's not a huge waste of public green space, and it's not racist. Good. So you go. That's how it's not like golf.
Those are important. Those are important things. Yeah, this seems great. This looks fantastic. I'd play this.
I mean, yeah, definitely. Like, it's a Steam. Really good... Hop in the voice chat on Discord late at night with friends game. Yeah. I bought it.
Golf ball into a T-Rex mouth, apparently.
Oh, my God. I want to play that one so bad. I need to just get all my friends to get this. It's so easy to learn. You just use the mouse, too. And, like, the physics are really, really weird. So it's just fun to see how the game kind of breaks when you play it.
And then
A couple $1,000 for bail funds and mutual aid. And then the next day, Kato was also on this. Yeah. He was playing, you were playing Tonight We Riot, which was so much fun to watch.
Yeah. Which I've talked about on the pod before, but quick recap was a side scrolling group based beat 'em up ish game about liberating a town from its corporate overlords. And it's great and ridiculous. I fought a crab monster on stream that was made by the pollution that the corporation was causing. It's great. it's great. And I kept losing a bunch during the stream. And it was because I wasn't properly prepared. And I ended up donning my mask and eye goggles and helmet for, you know, safe protesting.
Oh, I see. Okay. Is there a VOD up for this set of streams?
Yeah.
Was this the Hot Gamer Collective?
This is the Hot Gamer Collective, formerly known as Hot Gamers for Bernie. So that's something me and my friend Nico Deo, who's written for for Vice Gaming before, and Maddie Myers, who's now at Polygon, the three of us. Well, what happened was one day I came in and was like, when Bernie was still running, I came into our Discord and was like, does anyone want to do a charity stream for Bernie? And then I took a nap and Nico had just organized it. and then for this one, it was a similar thing where Nico was like, I think we should do a Black Lives Matter charity stream. And I was like, right, yeah, we should use the Discord be set up for the other one. And then the next day, we had a full schedule and graphics and everything. We set this up in a week and we raised $31,000 mutual aid and bail funds, and it was great. We didn't fundraise in the normal way that people do on Twitch. Normally people use an app called Tiltify, which just automatically counts donations if you use a particular link. We wanted to open it up to bail funds and mutual aid networks in people's like personal hometowns so that they can donate to things that would serve them directly instead of donating to a larger fund that would disperse the funds. So it was more complicated. We had people like email in receipts and stuff. Gotcha. We had this really long doc.
Cool.
But I think it's a better way to get people to learn about the mutual aid networks that are in their own hood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a
good
idea.
It was fun. Like David was with me, my boyfriend, David. and he doesn't really stream, but he was having fun. It was fun watching him do a charity fundraising stream because he was sort of learning about the educational aspect that kind of happens naturally when you do these things where people ask you what you're fundraising for. And then you have to not only explain what it is, but like why it's important and why you should give that money. So talking to people in the chat for a couple of hours about mutual aid networks, like I belong, I use NYC Mesh in New York City instead of corporate internet, for example. And that's like a volunteer-run network of a volunteer-run real mesh network of routers in Brooklyn and Manhattan. And it's kind of incredible. It didn't even occur to me to think about it as mutual aid until this all started. But it is like that's a way to get people free or no cost internet.
Totally.
Like it's the same speed as like normal consumer grade internet most of the time, except when your antenna on the roof blows over because of the wind.
Yeah. That's awesome.
And then yesterday, and like when you're listening to this, it might still be ongoing, but the YouTuber Big Joel asked me to be in the chat for his charity live stream, which has also raised over $30,000 for the Bail Fund Network, for the Bail Project. Yeah. He is playing Mario 64 and trying to beat it, and he's very, very bad at the video game. So he might still be fundraising currently. I hope so. The next time I'm on, I might stop by because he's just going to be going and going and going. He was truly losing his mind last night. He was stuck at 57 stars for so long. He just couldn't. It was 3D puzzle platforming with the Nintendo 64 controls. You know, it's
I'm terrible. Platformers went 3D and I didn't go with them. So,
well, neither did anybody.
Yeah. Well, people love those games.
People love them almost in spite of themselves. Yeah.
On the stream last night, he kept saying, "This game is such a classic. Everyone says it's such a classic. I'm having so much fun playing this classic game." I think I'm learning a lot about the existential fear of like a marathon fundraiser. He kept saying he was afraid to go to bed because he was afraid he'd wake up to three people in chat being like, "Well, you said you'd finish the game. You said you'd finish it." And they all give like $1 every hour. And he just has to stay there finishing the game, talking to no one, to an audience of no one.
Yeah, you could beat that game. That game's... Can he get a guide? He should get a guide.
He got to 57 stars before realizing he was not using a checklist.
Okay. But did he say he was going to 100% that game? Or that he
wanted to get all the stars.
Oh, well, there's a problem there, buddy.
Yeah.
just beat Bowser, all right? Just beat Bowser.
Just beat Bowser, okay?
No, that's all I'm saying. That's totally fine.
He ain't counting stars.
No. Yeah.
He's just fucking pick him up by his big tail, spin him around, throw him off the ledge or whatever. It's fine.
That's fine. Bowser's fine. Peach doesn't give a shit about your stars. He just wants to go home again.
He just wants to go home.
Yeah, she's making a cake in the middle of that.
Sounds like a very productive weekend. I guess while we're plugging things really quick, I like never plug Friends at the Table stuff here, but we are also doing a fundraiser right now of the buy stuff variety, not the live stream variety, because I think we're all very busy right now. Though one of us did a stream last week. Dre did a live stream that was also filled with like education and stuff, which was rad. But if you go to friendsatthetable.itch.io, there is a zine sale going on, plus a postcard sale, all digital stuff. We kind of collected all of the previous fanzines. We got permission from almost all of the artists. I think all but one of the artists we were able to get in touch with and either work out an honorarium or they would waive their fee. We were able to sell all of the past zines, which were for Counterweight, Marialda, Twilight Mirage, and then there is one of very, very, none of them are not safe for work. They're all very classy pinups called Who's That Big Man, a Friends at the Table pinup zine. So that's also in that collection.
What
and then also
a perfect
we used
name.
To, it's so funny. We had for our Patreon, we have postcard sets. We kind of have like microfiction and original art. And those have only been for like the $25 a month tier of the Patreon for the last 3 years or 2 years or whatever. And so now those are available digitally. And then that money goes to Reclaim the Block, Black Youth Project 100, Bail Project, and Marshall Project. So go check those out if you are a lapsed Friends of the Table fan and listen to Waypoint, but don't listen to Fat anymore, because that's fair. That happens. So yeah, just wanted to shout that out super quick.
Listen, every time I podcast with you, I end up buying something, and it's less true right now.
That's how it goes. That's how I do.
Speaking of Itch, they're also running a different thing, which is actually really good. A bundle of 742 different items.
It's actually, the thing is, I think it's 743 games. They forgot that they also included the game of looking through 25 pages of games and deciding which one... to download. It's called the Bundle for Racial Justice and Equality. It has stuff from 564 different creators. It has 742 items. They've raised $2.4 million so far for the NAACP amazing. Legal Defense and Education Fund and the Community Bail Fund. There's some incredible stuff in there, both large and small, both physical and digital. Like, it's a mix of tabletop stuff and lots of video games. It's good.
I was thinking of looking through this bundle and seeing what games that you might not have heard of that you want to check out that are in it, because there's just so many that it's difficult to parse. Like, it's difficult to express even how many games are in this.
I like went through that whole list and then I just opened it again. I was like, damn, how did I not see this one? I should add this one to my download queue.
Totally. Even there's just so much stuff that I've heard of and never had a chance to play. I heard Strawberry Cubes was great and it's in it. There's this game that's called Don't Take It Personally, I Just Don't Like You, the lo-fi anime dating sim to cry to, which sounds very fun.
Sounds great.
That's great. That's fantastic.
There's a lot of really good stuff in there, and so definitely worth checking out.
It seems dope.
Signs of Sojourners in there, and that just came out. Signs of
Sojourners just came out,
Minute is in it, which Minute's I know Tim Rogers Minute was raving about.
Very slept on. I really love Minute. I just shouted that out in another podcast.
Extreme Meat Punks Forever is in there.
Forever is in there. And then there's like
Nightly Riot is also in there.
Yeah.
There's stuff in there that's actually like even a little bit bigger on like the bigger side of indie, like Oxenfree and Mortician's Tale and Night in the Woods.
Julian Glander's Art School is also in there.
Totally. Overland is in here. Yeah, we could just do this all day because there's 700 plus games and every time you
exactly.
There's a billion otome games, there's a billion visual novels, there's like a ton of really cool tabletop stuff. Again, some big tabletop stuff like Blades in the Dark is just great.
Every time I'm on this podcast, I buy something. Yeah. Here I am.
So you could fall down this rabbit hole. It's there's a lot there. Go check that out for sure. I also played something this week, and it's the opposite of everything we just talked. Well, it's opposite in the sense that it's not indie. It's also in the sense that it is going for very big prestige stuff, and it's not even new, and it's you definitely play a shitty cop in it. Mm. So I definitely caught some feelings there, but I know it knows you're playing a shitty cop. I played like 3 hours of The Order 1886.
Yeah, there we go.
Oh my god, Rob's back in the game.
Rob's back, baby. This game's all right. This is all right. This game's fine. Oh, this game's all right. Rob has been pushing me to play The Order for probably on and off since it came out. Probably since you've been telling people that it's better than they think it is. That game's all right. So here's what I'll put you in my headspace. I have two things here. One is I was itching for shooting at monsters, but not in the like Diablo shooting at monster sense. Or fighting monsters. I almost played more of The Witcher 3, but I was like, I want to start that over. I'm like 50 hours in. That's enough to be, that's like right at the edge of what I could possibly just jump back in, you know? And I was like, what if I just get this through my system, you know? And the other half of it is with The Last of Us 2 coming out, I was like, I want to taste the Sony prestige mode of narrative again and have something to compare it to that isn't just Naughty Dog stuff. Because obviously, I think it's fair to say that there's a certain model of storytelling that is now suffused through a lot of the first or second party, whatever we want to call the. I actually don't know who Order is. Are they what's the name of that studio? Is that Ready at Dawn?
Is it Sony Santa Monica?
No, so Sony Santa Monica just did God of War. I think I want to say it's Ready at Dawn, but I don't remember if they're actually fully owned. No, it's not Ready at Dawn. It's It is Ready at Dawn. Yes, correct. Anyway. In fact, I didn't know this. I didn't know that it was former Naughty Dog and Blizzard people, but that makes a lot of sense. In any case, that was like a big launch game, The Order, and it kind of presaged what I think a lot of games in this from Sony would look like this generation. Probably building off of the success of Last of Us last generation. That even things like God of War would take on this sort of like prestige drama. Cinematography tone and stuff like that, and that stuff tends to not mesh well with me, despite being someone who likes prestige TV, despite being someone who likes that mode of storytelling. I tend to bounce off of it in games for a variety of reasons. Sometimes it's like Days Gone. I just don't think they're sticking the landing on that style of storytelling at all. But other times it just doesn't feel there's a degree to which it feels the edge has been sanded off. The thing about prestige TV is that, and when we talk about prestige TV, what are we talking about? We're talking about a huge variety of shows that tackle things that tackle a wide range of themes and genre space. And that have a great deal of variety. So I don't want to say like there's such a thing. There's a clear and super defined genre of prestige TV. But when you look at like the golden age of TV forward, you're looking at things that added a sort of edge to what television, the kind of contemporary model of television, looked like in terms of focusing on continuity and consequence, focusing on character and really sharp character performance work that went beyond, you know, episode of the week or you know, kind of episodic storytelling and moving into something more serialized. And you saw a range of topics that just weren't going to be covered, especially on network television at the time, or a range of perspectives, right?
Interject briefly. You can see how much this revolutionized television, how this specific trend that I think people say began with The Sopranos, but I'm not quite sure that's real. In the late 90s, there's this show that aired on Fox's first slate of original dramatic television programming called Prophet. That was basically the first anti-hero drama. And you can see in that show, it's on YouTube. It's hilarious, but it's also interesting to watch. It's on YouTube because you can see the things that there eventually would become prestige TV. And some of the people that worked in the show would go on to work on Buffy and then Lost and then other shows like this. So it's the first anti-hero protagonist. The big selling point of the show was that he was a businessman who thought murder was good, which apparently America had never seen before. So the first episode, that it's interesting to look at the way that people in television have been trying to do this and had never figured out how to break the then cemented form of television, which somewhere like HBO was able to do because they didn't have commercials.
Right. Wild. Yeah. So yeah, I think that era forward, you see a great deal of subject matter that would not have made it onto, you know, America's Favorite Network or any other network show. The kind of thesis I'm building towards here is that while that is what it feels like, those same sorts of stories to me when I see them in games have then been sanded back down for a wide consumer audience and for a slightly, the word mature is wrong here, but like none of that stuff hits the way some of the more nuanced stuff I see in shows I love from great showrunners like Deadwood or something, right? From Milch, or The Wire, right? Like that stuff doesn't, I'm never comfortable in those shows when the shows are at their best. Whereas I was comfortable all the way through God of War. I was just frustrated. You know what I mean? I wasn't challenged by those shows. I was, and that's also been my experience with Naughty Dog's games. And I know that this puts me as an outlier and can even kind of sound like an insult. And I'm not insulting anyone. I'm just talking about what my taste is. And so I went into this because I wanted to feel out that style of production, and to see how I felt about it ahead of Last of Us 2 and kind of get a taste. Also, I know it's not that long. I know it's like 8 hours. I'll be done it in, you know, by this time next week, which is a great feeling about a video game. It is really interesting because of how different, how distinct it feels compared to something like The Last of Us. I don't think there's a world in which it wins the awards The Last of Us wins. I don't think there's a world, and it didn't, obviously. I don't think that there's a world in which it is able to bring the conversations to bear where people say that, like, oh, this is a game that made me cry, or I don't know, maybe by hour eight I'll have changed my opinion on that. It's a pretty straightforward variation on, like, the third-person shooter, Gears of War, cover-based stuff. I get why I was dismissive of it when it came out, but I do think I undersold the degree to which it was willing to trust the audience to do some of the, to meet it halfway on some of its themes and world-building, and I definitely underestimated its ability to build a really cohesive and sharp world. The ways in which it the just like the level of detail and the spaces you're in are already all really cool. But the way that it slowly feeds you information about what this world is, what the stakes are, who you are in the world is way more restrained than I ever imagined it could be. There was a moment, I guess, to set it up, you are at the top of the game, you're being drowned. You're in prison, you're being drowned, you're in some sort of British lockdown. You don't really know what time or place it is. It looks like it's probably turn of the 20th century, maybe a little bit before. It's hard to say. It's like, you know, somewhere in the late 1800s, probably 1886, I would say, probably around the order 1886.
Yeah.
And you end up kind of escaping from this prison. You're confronted by people who clearly have some emotional investment of you, who used to be your allies. And, you know, you end up getting into a flashback, you know, how did I get here type moment, where you are going into an area that has been taken over by quote unquote bedlamites. Which are escaped prisoners and people who are in an asylum who've taken over. I forget what the building is even. It's like a fancy
building. It's like a merchant exchange.
Tied to a trade company. And also there are some werewolves nearby, so that's no good. You're like, what the fuck are the bedlamites doing talking to the lichens? This is no good. Are the rebels involved? And like, wait. I'm looking at my uniform. Am I a baddie? Am I the fascist? Yes, absolutely. You were absolutely the fascists. And there's a moment early on where I'm like, okay, I got it. There's werewolves. There's da 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 da. And then there's this kind of back to back moment of you meet a guy who's named Lafayette, and it becomes clear like this is the Lafayette. This is the Marquis de Lafayette who, you know, helped the American revolutionaries, went back to France and took part in the French Revolution. That shit was before 1886, and he looks young and prosperous. He's like a ladies' man. And you're like, wait, if that's him, how alternate is this alternate universe, actually? What's going on here that this guy is either still around or has he been moved out of? Like, what's going on? I think I have an answer for it now, but I'm not far enough in to have that confirmed. But it starts going like, wait a second. Okay, what do I have? What is it that I have access to? And as far as I'm in the game now, I just had an incredible sequence where we are moving through Whitechapel, because all games set in this period of England have to do their Jack the Ripper thing and have to bring you into Whitechapel. And you're moving through this space. You're fighting the kind of revolutionaries that are there who are trying to fight for liberty against the tyranny of the Queen, which fair. And you get into this like incredible shootout in the streets where a local cop gets caught and you're trying to drag him into safety, which again, what a week to play this game. And first of all, this is extremely the game of like, the fascists have the cool guns. You definitely have a gun that just shoots thermite into the air and then you ignite the thermite. Which is terrifying. Uh-huh. But being able to like draw from one building to another and then light the entire like crosswalk above it is
sound effect is real good for it.
It's
too.
A good sound
just
effect.
The sound of the air catching fire. It's like
yeah. And then you drag him in. You drag this fucking guy who just died for you right into this building, and it's you and like three other of these super cops from the order called Knights. And the one of your mentors basically had gotten shot in the neck, grazed in the neck. And meanwhile, this cop on the ground is like bleeding out from a gut shot, basically. And your mentor like takes this little vial and sips it, and then the wound heals up. And the guy on the ground is just like slowly bleeding out. It's like, nothing to do for him. Save your prayers. There's no God. And it's like, you all have this vial. You could just give it to him. He's right. He died. Uh-huh. For you, he's right. Okay, we're not gonna talk about it. And that's a moment that in a different game, I think would have gotten this huge scene where one character says to another one, "We have the vial. Why don't we just give him the juice? Why don't we give him the juice?" And then character B says, "We, you know, we can't give him the juice. The queen has to say that we have to give him the juice." And then he goes, no, Liberty, we have to, you know, we're the good guys. You have to go back to thinking about what good means, lad, or whatever. And then we move, and like, no, none of that happens.
Boyo?
Instead, yeah, boyo. And instead, it's just nothing. It's just this guy dies on the ground, miserable, watching someone else heal from a much lesser wound, wasting his queen juice. And that's a great moment. And it's a moment that feels like it doesn't have the sort of scaffolding around it with all of the big bright signage pointing at, like, look, this is an important scene. And that brings me in a lot deeper than when I hear the violin cue up an emotional moment. And that's just how I tend to experience a lot of narrative stuff. Not that I don't love a good violin cueing up an emotional moment when it works, but when I can feel the hand of the creator telling me that something is important, it can kind of pull me away from it sometimes. So yeah, Rob, thank you for pushing me on this. I don't know if you have any updated order thoughts right now.
I think in some ways it's a game that probably ages even better than I thought. Because I think one of the themes you talk about it being, you play a shitty cop. I think one of the other things that runs through that game is the way your Enchanted Knights of the Round Table police force isn't just meant to evoke police, but also like modern elite commando troops, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's a sequence, I don't know if you've gotten to it, but it's like, I think it might be toward the end of the Whitechapel run where you call in air support. And your guys like get on there. They've got their little they wear their radios where the cops do, basically. Yep. the shoulder mic. And they get on their handset and they call in like airstrike support from Zeppelins that are just orbiting London. And the entire thing evokes, you know, Spectre gunship strikes in the War on Terror, drone strikes. But of course, this is being deployed in the heart of London. At the behest of these cops. And I think one of the things running through this is that the tools of imperial violence abroad will inevitably make their way home.
Right. And, this is like classic shit.
Yeah. And the thing that this game is meant to evoke is it is evoking the forms of imperial violence that modern empires like the United States deploy. Right. It isn't evoking pith helmets and red coats, in India at the time. It is evoking the way we fight wars across Africa, across Afghanistan, across Iraq right now. Mm-hmm. So I think that is one of the interesting things about it. And I think here is the paradox. That stuff is also kind of cool and engaging in the way that, like, the thermite, gun is cool. Like, the... Who's the quote that says you can't make a truly anti-war picture because the spectacle is it Renoir?
That, ooh, I'm not sure. I know the quote. I don't know.
I think
it might
have been Renoir, actually. Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, but I think that I'm not sure that's a statement that totally holds true. I think we probably all have the movie that we'd hold up as like, I think this might disprove it. But I think there's something to it, right? Which is that the spectacle of violence and the spectacle of like tremendous powers being unleashed and being wielded by people, that is very seductive. And yeah. Cameras, like visual media, love it. You see colors and you hear things that just don't occur in daily life. And I think that can make that creates, I think, a tension within these things. I think The Order 1886 has a very smart critique, and I think it tells the story very, very well. At the same time, there is a part of me that when you like look over the London skyline and you hear the dry voice of the Zeppelin operator just like asking for coordinates, and then you just like rain down hell, you're like, fuck yes, games rule.
Right.
But also,
even the thermite gun,
this is bad.
Yeah. Even the thermite gun and the sort of like, there is a sort of procedural rhetoric at place in terms of, or it's not even a rhetoric in the sense that it's intentional, but there is a sort of formal thing happening in the game where you get this gun that, again, the way what it does is it kind of puts puffs of thermite in the air when you shoot it, and then you kind of trigger that with a spark that then lights up the entire any area that has any of it lingering nearby. You find that in a rebel supply bin, basically. It turns out they have weapons they shouldn't have that have been smuggled in. Those weapons were only deployed by the order a week ago. But you never have them deployed against you. You fight them through the streets, and they are using like shotguns and pistols and rifles, and they're this kind of ragtag rebellious group. You have not yet at this point, at least, faced that style of violence against you, where you are, outnumbered or outgunned. And so it's kind of weird that there is a sort of sleight of hand happening there, where like the reason it is in the moment it feels okay to use a weapon so severe as that. Or feels okay is subjective and not exactly clear. But the reason that it feels like the characters are quick to do it is like, oh, these are our weapons. They were going to use them against us. We have them right now. Let's use them against them. But they didn't use them against you. They kept them in a bin in a crate below. And you as a player didn't have the gameplay experience of having to face that stuff. So it never disempowers you. It never actually, but it gives you the framing in which you theoretically were up against this thing, and kind of makes it a fair use case in a very strange way. So I think the fact that the game knows it wants you to feel like a badass, because that's what games are supposed to do. I think this ends up being part of what my problem with this model of storytelling in games ends up being is the Tony Soprano does not often feel like a badass. And when he does, it is at some incredible cost to his humanity, to his relationship with other people, often materially. And likewise, across the wide range of, again, what we call prestige television, that model of storytelling. In great films that are about, quote unquote, about something, those moments of dramatic violence don't necessarily... I mean, I guess this goes back, and I looked it up, it was a Truffaut quote. It does go back to that. It's like, can those moments of violence will they ever be free of the joyous spectacle that is on screen to display them? And I think that violence can be on screen in other ways, and I think maybe war specifically struggles, but I think that you can have sequences of violence that are shocking and stirring and demoralizing and everything in between. And I think that in general, it's hard for me to see that in games because of how much of it there has to be. It has to feel good to pull the trigger 1,000 times per level often, you know?
A lot of, I think, if we can typify what prestige television does narratively, a lot of it has to do with understatement and subversion. So if you look at a show like Deadwood, where in the first episode, still the only episode of Deadwood I've seen, there is a scene where a man has to be hung by the neck because he's a criminal. And it doesn't work because actually when you're hung from the neck, it doesn't always work. So he has to be pulled down to break his neck so he can die. And the reaction from the way it's framed, it's understated, right? It's not framed so that it's shocking to the people around you. It's framed so that you understand the extremity of the lengths of, you know, what it is like to live in the town of Deadwood, where things are just shitty all the time and everyone's swearing.
Can't even hang a man right.
Right, right. And, you know, that I feel like is a narrative beat you can get in a video game, but it has to come around just violence, 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 a lot of the time in these AAA games that are going for this kind of thing. I think that was my big problem with The Last of Us, its approach, is that it tries to make those kinds of narrative moments, especially specifically talking about near the end with the elephants and then the thing that you have to do, where it's just like it just goes mega grim to differentiate the grimness of the world around it.
The dogs are going to have names this time, Kida. So I think
there's a couple things. One is that I think while like the prestige game shares a word with prestige TV, and I think certainly the way they are marketed, they want to reach for that level of like cultural cachet. Really, I think what their dominant aesthetic is actually the impact aesthetics of late 90s, early 2000s war movies. Like desaturated, understated. Because if you think about it, a lot of prestige TV is actually evoking neo-noir color palettes, or even like Mad Men isn't like full on Technicolor, but there are times like it really does love to like saturate the palette in a way that you just don't see in certainly this mode of game, right? Where it's like very monochromatic, very grayscale. But I think the other part of this is to the point about, like, there's so much violence in these games. I think the only solution they've tried to come up with to make it feel like it has weight and maybe feel like it is exacting a moral cost on your protagonists is to make it comically graphic and grotesque at times. And it takes itself very seriously. But if you look at, like, The Last of Us, I was replaying it a bit, you know, trying to get in the headspace for Last of Us 2, revisit it. And I do like The Last of Us. But when you look at, like, the animations of Joel, like, grabbing somebody and just fucking hauling that blade across the throat, yeah, and blood's geysering everywhere and everyone just covered in it. The first time you do it, you're like, whoa, Jesus, this is brutal. You will do that 1,000 times during that game, and there'll be variations on that same animation. And the game will want to say, like, man, isn't this game brutal? Isn't it awful? And isn't this a grim world? And it's like, no, this is actually just a really way more violent and graphic, like, animation for something I do in a million other games.
Right.
And I think therein lie the trouble. Like, these aren't prestige. They're not. They can't, because we don't. AAA games don't exist in. They don't have the grammar to do what prestige TV does, which is unpack character through inaction, through conversation. Mm-hmm. Instead, the defining action of a game character is to move, to kill. And so I think we end up in this really uncomfortable place with these games where in the marketing and the way they are pitched, they're trying to say they offer profound truths about human nature. But I think there are limited truths you can glean about human nature from creeping around behind waist-high walls and then, like, leaping out to stab a zombie in the throat. Like, I think there's –
you're totally right.
Moral education is limited there.
There's also a difference in goal, right? Very quick Google searches just now, you know, Mad Men in season 7 drew between 1.4 and 3.3 million viewers per episode. Something like Scandal even, right, which I think is, like, on the edge of mainstream television and prestige TV, you know, 5 mil viewers. NCIS, 12.3 million viewers in its 17th season, right? These want to be NCIS. These don't want to be Mad Men. These don't want to be The Sopranos. They don't want to be just the water cooler conversation of the people in the know. They want to be big cultural moments. And in that way, they have more in common with young Sheldon than with Deadwood, right? And I think that's an interesting dilemma, because to reach that wide audience, the thing that you're saying is prestige TV and prestige TV showrunners and filmmakers literally change the verbiage of, or the technique of storytelling in order to evoke something distinct from what primetime network television, popular television shows. That is not what's happening in prestige gaming or prestige, you know, style, this particular model of storytelling inside of games. They are, in fact, still stuck in the box of the same sort of mechanics and tools and verbs that we use across gaming. Even in the most pulpy, you know, gamer ass game, you're still doing, even in Doom, you're doing the same. In fact, the irony of it, of course, is, like, Doom makes a splash a few years ago because of how it rejects left trigger, right trigger, because of how it feels distinct from what had become the de facto way that a game is supposed to feel if it's a big, important game. Rob, you had something else.
No, I was just thinking how I think the real parallel, I think, of the prestige game is the comic book movie.
Yes.
Where what they want is the cultural credibility and importance that works of prestige TV are courted as works of art. But also they want to be works where the hero beats the shit out of the villain for 10 minutes and then, like, you know, ascends to the great tower and has a huge battle. And, you know, that's how it ends. And I think the appeal made here is to say, well, stories in this mode can still tell important stories. And I think that's true. I think genre can tell really important stories. I think by the end of the Order 1886, I'm not sure. I think the awkward thing is, I think the game itself, like, may not be an important game because it has some of those limitations you cited, Austin. Like, I think it doesn't know how to reinvent the cover shooter to make it so that you are, like, fighting yourself, that you were up against the tools that you employ. But I think by the end, it will have told a story worth telling that has some resonance to modern society in a way that a lot of games from that generation, certainly early generation games, really didn't. But I think the thing we encounter a lot with games is we conflate a certain, grim-facedness, backed by money with importance and mm-hmm. insight. And I think that's a bit of what is going on.
Yeah. And we're going to have this conversation again and again in the coming weeks. Once The Last of Us 2 is out and the embargo drops and all of that. I know some folks here are playing it. I've not touched it yet. I haven't decided if I'm going to play that game yet. I need to like sit with myself and be honest about whether or not I will enjoy it or if I will have something interesting to say about it or if it will just be the conversation we just had. But again, and if it's that, then why waste your time making you hear me just repeat myself, right? I guess I'll wait and see what people think. Any other thoughts here, or should we go to our first break? I say first break like we're going to have a second break. I don't think we're
Austin, I just have one question. How far are you?
Not that. I'm at the part that you just talked about, the Zeppelins. I've moved the Zeppelins into place. I think I'm about to call their heavenly firepower down on these traitorous rebels. So,
because, I look forward to revisiting this conversation because I do think the second and third acts of the Order, I think, dig into some of the themes that have interested you. And
I believe you.
But it's the rare game that actually seems to know where the landing is. Okay. Much like which a lot of games not only do not stick the landing, but they end up in a completely different drop site.
Right. Totally. Totally. It's one of those things where it's like you can see the shape of the story. I mean, it opens with you in prison by the Order. Right. So like it is not hiding that the arc of this game is going to be that you get wrapped up in some shit. You learn some unfortunate truths. You start to question the side that you're working for and blah, 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 which is I would rather that they did what they did telegraph that than me have to slog through all this shit where I like, does this game know what it's doing? Like, no, it clearly does know. It is clearly building towards that thing. But yeah, we'll see. It's short enough that I will finish it. You know, it's short enough that I can like plug away at it a couple of hours a day or sit with it this weekend and just like knock it out. So I'm looking forward to that for sure. I'll be in touch, Rob, with some more thoughts. Okay, I'm going to move on. There's a whole other conversation I could have built off of from there. I'm not going to do it. We're going to go to a break and we're going to come back. So, BRB.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
All right, we are back. During the break, Kata reminded me that we did do something else this weekend.
Yeah, there was an event in Destiny.
Was there? Yeah, there was. There was. There was. I'm sure. Was, yeah. I'm sure on the back end, it was actually very hard to do. So
yeah, Destiny had its first. People keep referring it to this way. I'm sure other things have done it, but the most recent touchdown is Fortnite style. Event where like a thing happens that you have to kind of be in game to witness. Mm-hmm. And it was basically the end of this current season where if you played Destiny 1, you might remember the ship called the Almighty that was gonna use the sun's fuel to blow up the fucking earth. Yeah. That was left dormant after you disabled its weapon.
Why did we leave that dormant? Zavala, why did we leave that dormant, my guy? We got spaceships. We should have gone and taken that thing.
Try to tow it or something. Here's the thing is that it's
push it into the sun. Push it into the sun.
No, no, that was the thing. They explained during Destiny 1 that you have to be very careful about how you disable the weapon, because if you just push it into the sun, it would cause the sun to go supernova. It would destroy the solar system.
Pull out like the fuel or whatever in this thing.
Right, right. That's what we end up doing, right? You disable the weapon through some bullshit. But then you just have to kind of leave it there in orbit, unusable. And they probably should have taken any like fuel out of its rockets, but it turns out the Cabal go back up there.
It's been years.
Yeah,
it's been years.
A long fucking time. Surprised the Cabal are just doing this. But they end up getting back on there and aiming it at Earth and just kind of let it like hit the rockets, and it's on a crash course.
Right, colony drop style.
Yeah. So for this entire season, we've been helping Rasputin build up enough firepower to take it out
in a way that the ancient war mind from the golden age.
Yeah. Okay. The AI supercomputer that controls a series of satellites and weaponry from the golden age that may or may not have attacked.
Nothing says golden age like webs of orbital satellites and weaponry.
Yep. You know, just a bunch of surveillance and the weaponry. No big. And that's basically what the big, like, kind of narrative theme of this season has been. There's a lot of repeatable kind of quests where you're, like, helping build up his power. And then they announce, tune in Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific. Watch the almighty, Rasputin launch his attack. And so... This is right.
That's
after.
Exciting. Okay, that's that. At that point, I'm like, ooh, okay,
all right.
I will log in and see Rasputin. You know, Rasputin's always been a really interesting figure in Destiny.
Yeah,
I feel like he's been built up over the years. Going back to Destiny 1, you find the bunker on the Cosmodrome where he's listening to music. Like, ooh, is this? What's up with Rasputin? I thought Rasputin
was asleep. Apparently, no one likes ballet in the future except for Rasputin.
Absolute bullshit.
Ballet whips. Okay.
Yeah. People fucking still like ballet. That's some bullshit. That's Rasputin saying that about himself.
No. That was fucking the ghost being like, there's so few ballet. It's like, who do you talk to anyone? No, you sit in my fucking backpack, ghost. Shut up.
You don't know shit. Yeah, go away. So, when I saw the tweet, Rasputin is at full power tomorrow at 10 a.m. We take aim at the Almighty. It's like, ooh, okay. Something's going to happen.
Well. And I guess something did happen eventually, but I had just finished streaming on the charity stream, and I logged off and went on to Destiny. I was like, all right, I'm like 15 minutes. I'm like, I hope I didn't miss anything. I hadn't missed anything. Nothing fucking happened for the first, let's say... What was it?
30 minutes
at least before we saw a sign of something.
Yeah.
And then you see.
And also what this is like, it's everyone is sitting in the tower, which is like the big public, one of the two big, or three or four, I guess now, big public social spaces, looking up at a skybox where the spaceship is kind of blotting out the sun.
Yeah.
And you're like, all right, when's it going to happen?
Something's going to happen.
And it
was very funny. I don't know how many people know about this. There's a little trick in the tower where through kicking a series of balls into specific corners of the tower, you end up setting off fireworks.
Oh.
And someone went through the trouble of doing that puzzle while we were there, and fireworks went off like at minute 20, and people were like, oh, something's happening, because so many people have forgotten this knowledge. It's very good. And it was like, no, that's nothing. That's somebody just fucking around because they're waiting.
Good. Great. The vibe was very much like waiting for fireworks to start.
Right.
It's like people out in their holographic chairs.
Yeah, totally.
Sipping their holographic drinks, sitting, doing their emotes. Which is a weird vibe, given the event is like, this thing is coming to kill us all, and we hope we're not betrayed by this ancient super AI that we can't really trust, but we've done a bunch of work for the last month. I hope it
everybody do
life.
The worm emote.
Exactly.
It absolutely feels like a part of that, though, is the way that Destiny has always framed its big moments as they're never, it never feels like things will really ever go wrong. You know, right. It's never had those types of stakes where, like, even if you quote unquote succeed at your mission, something goes wrong. It's like the thing that you think is going to happen is going to happen. I was hoping for some sort of surprise. But eventually, after an hour and a hour and a half, basically, of waiting, at about 30 minutes,
which is so much time.
A lot of time.
The thing you're doing is like, just like, you're not running a fight for that long.
Right.
You're not, it's not like, oh, they're still coming. You know what I mean? There's nothing. It's looking at a skybox.
Yeah. It is watching. It feels like it was set up to be, because there's so much fucking lead time, it feels like it was set up to be something that people realized organically. And, like, you know, people are like, wait, what is that? Why is the skybox changing? Like, how, like, because first you start to see, you notice that the Almighty has been kind of getting closer and closer in the skybox. And then, like, that day it kind of was at its largest and, like, really obvious. And then you start to notice, like, these streaks, which are obviously either missiles or warsats that Rasputin has launched at the Almighty. But once they appeared, they took a full hour of, like, traveling through the skybox to reach the Almighty, which, like, that feels like, oh, we were supposed to not announce this. We were supposed to find this organically, and then people would, like, start tweeting and, like, streaming and be like, oh, what's happening? Something's happening. Something's changing. And that would build some sort of excitement into finally the moment where, like, right, the Almighty comes down. Instead, they announce the start time of the skybox changing, which is a full hour and a half before anything of note happens. So you get a lot of people getting kind of frustrated, like, I need to go have lunch. Bye. Like, people leaving in my tower, they're like, people streaming in and out, just like, is anything happening yet? No. Okay, bye. Like, it was not rolled out super great. Eventually, finally. Yeah. Eventually the warsats hit the Almighty. And there was a pretty cool, like, just like moment of it exploding in the sky, falling through the atmosphere, nearly taking out a mountain. And that part was, like, really neat. But after an hour and a half of waiting, it definitely felt like, all right, that went the way we expected it to. Rasputin saved the world. But both things of, like,
Rasputin, was it just a part of the Almighty that fell, or was it the whole thing?
No, it was the whole thing.
How? Okay, but it still hit the Earth.
Right, but it didn't blow up. It blew up in space.
I see.
The point was it was supposed to hit and explode. It was like a bomb.
It was carrying a bomb. Okay. It wasn't that the impact of the ship was going to be so great because it was rapidly approaching us from the sun. No. And, like, a giant asteroid would cause permanent change to the Earth's biosphere. It had a bomb on there.
Yeah, it was itself a bomb, and, like, what fell to Earth ended up being the leftover debris of that explosion, but it was a pretty sizable chunk of the Almighty. There's a kind of comically in the corner section of the tower now that has some rubble. Site. Yeah, like, there's, like, a little, like, area where something hit, but otherwise, like, unless you know to look for it, nothing fucking happened to the tower.
And all you get is, like, a banner, right?
Yeah. You get an emblem for going over and looking at the, it says inspect crash site, and then you get an emblem. Hooray. Mm-hmm. It's very funny. It just felt like it felt like they set it up to be more dramatic and a little more world changing than it ended up being. And that's honestly kind of what I've expected from Destiny, kind of a bit. It's just like, it feels like things could get really interesting, but they rarely do until, like, big expansions. Like, all the stuff in between, all of, like, the small seasons have so far been, like, all right, this past one was kind of the worst as far as, like, making it feel like making your impact felt in, like, the story that was happening. Even though, like, technically, I guess directly every time you did that one activity, you were making Rasputin stronger. Although, here's the other funny thing. They ran an event where it's like, oh, we have to hit X amount of completions of this activity in order to make sure Rasputin's up to snuff. And then not enough people were playing Destiny to hit that number. And it was pretty clear within the first day that they were not, the current right. community was not going to hit that number, and they had to boost it by a magnitude of 10 in order to actually make that.
That's a big difference. That's a big difference.
It was and rough. So then
for this to be, not the reward to that, but the I mean, like, diegetically the reward for that.
Right.
But this is
but like that being the preamble to this was like rough. It's like, oh, there's not even that many people interested in engaging with this at this moment. And then,
and then you have this opportunity to bring a bunch of people in because they hear, oh, it's a live event, and they think about the stuff that Fortnite has done. I don't even mean the Travis Scott stuff or the concerts. I mean the like going into the next season, everything's going to disappear or everything's going to, you know, there's going to be
map
a big
changes
a
because
rocket.
The rocket thing, that whole thing, like watching that rocket in, I wasn't even in Fortnite when I watched the rocket. I watched it on some stream, and like that was still more exciting than this ended up being. Yeah. I think there was a lot of expectations given what other things have been hinted at. They're kind of hinting a lot of about what the next season is going to be. There's actually a stream tomorrow morning doing their first big announcement. There's been a lot of very interesting cutscenes and rumors. And I think people were expecting this event to have more of a tie-in with those sorts of things. And it totally was not.
Well, I hope that next stuff, I do hope the next season seems cool.
It sounds like there are big changes happening again. I hope Destiny will be good again. You know, the way it is once every year, you know? It like gets
once every
really
year
good.
It gets good. Yeah, this is the good season. Yeah, that's so weird. Anyone else playing something they want to shout out or talk about? I could talk briefly about Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition. I believe it's called
Love to know about Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition.
I think that's right. Is it Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition. Yeah, that's correct. Xenoblade is a series. The Xeno series is very broad and long. And I've not played enough. I played Xenogears when it came out. I didn't play any of the Xeno Saga games.
What's up? The PS2 games, Xeno Saga?
Yeah. What about them?
Are those connected to Xenoblade?
Yeah. Well, are they or are they not?
I don't know.
The Xeno series, the Xeno meta series, is Xenogears, Xeno Saga, and Xenoblade Chronicles.
Oh my god. Okay.
Even inside of Xenoblade Chronicles, Xenoblade Chronicles, Xenoblade Chronicles X, and Xenoblade Chronicles 2 are all in different settings, but have overlapping callback stuff.
Is it the kind of like Final Fantasy situation where certain things recur, or is it more like these things are technically happening in a connected world? Of some sort, a connected universe. Is it the Xenoblade cinematic universe, or
if we had a cinematic universe as wild as the Xeno universe is, we wouldn't know it exists. Like, it would just be happening.
Right.
We would learn one day. We would learn one day that Memento and like I'm thinking of another like. Frozen are in the same universe. Do you know what I mean? Which is going to happen after Disney buys all of the works of Nolan and brings them into the Disney cinematic universe. But you know what I mean? Like that is that's not true. They're all sci-fi, science fiction / science fantasy, JRPGs. But there is a wide range of like characters and settings and situations. In any case, the Xenoblade Chronicles games are kind of have always been since this first one, open world, third person, like action or not action RPGs. Like they're JRPGs that have actually a lot in common with MMO combat. You select an ability, you auto attack when you select an enemy, then you select abilities to use, and abilities can combo and chain. And a lot of the game is about like I'm going to inflict break on an enemy, and then one of my other teammates can inflict topple to knock them over and to daze them. And like that is like the basic game flow. And I played a lot of Xenoblade Chronicles X, which was maybe the most MMO of these because your character was just kind of a nobody who had joined a group of like it had the most your character can't matter because there have to be 1,000 of you, even though it was not an MMO. And that game was cool and had a great open world. Monolith, the developer, is a really great is really good at making these kind of vast open alien spaces that interlock in cool ways and have a great deal of verticality. That game took a lot of advantage of the verticality because eventually you got a mech, and that eventually that mech could fly. And so there was this really great sense of looking up at the beginning of the game being like, how the hell am I ever going to get up there? And then 60 hours in being like, with this fucking sick mech and like flying up there. The Xenoblade 2 had, I'd say, lots of issues in the character design. And I think it was like extremely drawing on kind of some of the worst elements of shonen stories, and like it's a very horny game in a way that like was like kind of cringy. I still think that those mechanics were really good, and I think some of the world building and some of the locations and story stuff were really interesting, and I actually liked a lot of the characters when it wasn't being embarrassing. I think a lot of them actually had a lot of heart. And I really liked the complexity of the combat. And I'd never played this Xenoblade Chronicles until now, because it was a Wii U game. Or was it a Wii game originally? God, was it originally a Wii game? Let's see. Yeah, I think it was originally just a Wii game after I had sold my Wii for rent money. So I just never got around to it.
Shulk, right?
You play as Shulk.
Shulk has from Super Smash Brothers.
From Super Smash Brothers, who fights with the Monado. Monado. It's a big red sword. Monado, it's a big red sword. Monado, Monado. Great.
Menudo?
I think it's, yeah, Menudo. Yeah, that's correct. God. And it is, again, a big, open, pretty RPG. Where you're getting a billion quests. Like, I've never seen as many side quests as I've seen in this game. Just dozens of go kill 3 of these things, go find 5 of these things. But it does do some really interesting stuff that I think takes its own fiction more seriously, not in terms of theme, but in terms of mechanics. The premise of this game is that, or the premise of this game's world is that you live on of the body of a god. There is a huge organic god that many eons ago was in combat with a big mechanical god. They're called Bionis and Makonis, obviously. And many years ago, Makonis slammed a sword into Bionis, and then both of them froze in place. And ever since then, that's where people live.
That's from Dune, right? Those are the houses.
Yeah, those are the houses. Houses of Dune. God, if there was a Xenoblade Dune crossover, it would be the most cursed thing I've ever seen in my life. Which is the thing that's cool about this is at any point you kind of look up and be like, yeah, there's the sword from the god that slammed into the god we live on. That's wild. I hope no robots come and kill it. Oh no, the robots have come to kill us. And one of the big truths about this world is it's very hard to kill the robots that are from the robot god's body that occasionally come to terrorize the humans and other species on the biological god's body. There's only one weapon that can really do it, and it's called the Monado, which is this sick laser sword that also lets you, Shulk, see the future. And I came to this game knowing all of the things I just said and thinking that those things were going to be story elements, but they're all like super important mechanical elements too. So the Monado is the only weapon in the game that can just hurt these robots that fight you. You often are fighting monsters or creatures or other people, and all weapons work for that. But when you're fighting these robots, only your weird laser sword can damage them unless you enhance the rest of your party or do a series of combos to weaken the enemy and topple them and let them take damage. And that is like such a small thing, but it suddenly means that certain party compositions you have to think about party composition in different ways. You have to invest in the Monado's abilities when you're leveling up and stuff like that, because they have a real effect on whether or not you're able to win those fights well. And it's also just cool to be like, yeah, this is the character who is just sick at fighting robots. Everyone else is good at everything else, but this motherfucker fights robots. That's what he does. And that being, I have played so many JRPGs where that is true fictionally, but then mechanically it's like, oh no, he does 5% more damage or something like that. This is like, no, everyone else does 1 damage. He does 702. Like, that's a big, big, meaningful difference. The other thing that is mechanized that I didn't expect to show up in that way is that the Monado lets you see the future. And early in the narrative, it's like, oh no, I saw, you know, oh, they're going to try to shoot me. I'll get killed. So let me go right instead of left. Oh no, they're coming for my friend. I can't stop them. They're too far away. I can't help, but I've seen how terrible this is going to go. And I'm like, okay, that's what it's going to be. But then you get into a fight kind of towards the end of the second or third chapter where you see your friend being killed in this fight. And then it goes like, all right, so here's how you have to stop that from happening. You have to figure out a way to interrupt this enemy before it does this death blow attack on your friend. And that becomes a recurring mechanical thing where there are different there every once in a while you in regular combat, even against kind of like non-boss characters, but I think even like stronger mid-tier enemies, you'll say, it'll say like, oh, they're about to do this wild attack. They're going to hit you for this much damage, or they're going to do this sort of like, they're going to summon more enemy, or whatever it is, right? Other types of abilities. And there are different ways for you to interrupt based on what type of abilities it is, whether that's like raising a shield to protect somebody or hitting them with a status effect to prevent them from doing the thing. And that is just, I had no idea that was in this game. And it's very cool to be like, oh, hey, yeah, you're playing a character who can see the future, who can see moments in the future. Here's how you would use that. Here's how you can use that to sway these battles in your into your advantage. It's way more gimmicky than I imagined the game would be. And that is actually a compliment to it. It reminds me of playing a board game in a weird way, where you sit down with something like a worker placement game and you go, okay, well, what's the theming here, and then how does the theming affect the core mechanics? And like, oh, well, in this game, you know, we are it's all about automation, and so once per turn you can repeat a single action or something like that. And like, oh, okay, cool. Like, that's not a big dramatic change to what a worker placement game is, but it does give you some of the theme of the game inside of the moment-to-moment play. And this just does a good job of that. It's also very pretty, and the music is good. And so, like, I get it. I get why people said that this was slept on. I don't know how much deeper I'll go into it, because I do think narratively it's been very, like, stock. It's very much the chosen boy goes off into the world with his friends. And I will say I got my dose of that probably already this year from Final Fantasy VII, and honestly, even that version of it was stronger, because it is not, it's sort of the chosen boy, but that boy don't want to be chosen, and that's, you know, complicated for various reasons throughout the game. But I don't know, it's very pleasant, and it's nice to have a very pleasant game to play right now, given the way the world is. So Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition, definitely worth at least a peek if you're looking for something like that. Anyone else playing anything they want to shout out? If not, I can go to the question bucket. Gita?
I've been trying to learn how to not suck at Valorant.
Oh, hell yeah.
That's nice. Yeah, that's I finally figured out how to get the game to work on my computer, so that's great.
Step one.
Yeah, the Vanguard anti-cheat was really giving me hell during the beta, but it seems to have resolved whatever issue it was having, so phew. But yeah, I played some Spike Rush with Heather Alexandra from, she's not a journalist anymore.
She's not a journalist anymore.
Double Fine now.
Yeah.
She's a community manager. Super cool. So she's much better at shooters than me. So it was really nice having her around. And she wanted to play Spike Rush with me because it's really fast paced and nobody minds if you mess up. And it's really just about people having fun and trying to figure out how to play the game, learning maps and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So once I've got, I think the big thing that I really figured out how to focus on is, like, it's so important for you to look at the map and learn the map and learn location names. Like, you just have to do it. you have to do it, or else you will not be helpful at all. Dying sucks, but knowing where you are and how to tell people where people are coming from will still help people so much. Mm-hmm. But I tried a new character finally. I tried Sova. I've been playing Sage, who's the healer, which is, like, as a support character, you kind of always know how to help people because healing people's always good, right?
Right.
But I tried Sova, which is the one that has the tactical arrow that can show you where people are. And I think now my investment in this game has grown because I really liked playing that character quite a bit. There's something about that specific ability that is so much fun when you, like, especially something as fast paced as Spike Rush, which is like 20 minute games each, basically, where you can just fuck up everyone's day just by planting an arrow just right so that it hits the broadest range of the map that they could possibly be coming through. And so they can't escape you. And that's just an immediate turning of the tide a lot of the time. I don't know. There's something really fun about finding your main in a game. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this might be close to it. I don't know. Austin, you said you're also trying to be not bad at Valorant. I don't know what that means.
It means that it's gotten harder because more people are playing and because there's no competitive mode right now, which means that the really good players haven't filtered themselves out into playing ranked mostly. It means that I've had like way harder matches than I did during beta, which is not that surprising, obviously. That's a pretty common thing. You know, by the end of beta, I was mostly winning that game when I played. Now I'm mostly losing those games. I don't know if
Kata... I can see a difference, too, in Spike Rush, even, where people that just know these maps and know how to play have played Counter-Strike Global Offensive, clearly. Yeah. Like, just clearly have.
Yeah.
And I know what makes a person good at that game, but I don't have that experience with it. So I'm just starting from a totally different place.
Yeah, totally. I really like Spike Rush too. I find that it's like a really great cooldown for me at the end of a session. Mm-hmm. I have a harder time starting with it and then going into regular games, but I really like cooling down with it for sure.
I like the length of a standard unranked game, you know?
Yeah,
but Heather only had time for Spike Rush, so I gave it a shot. And I did feel like I would prefer to play this after a longer, slower paced game.
Yeah.
But I did appreciate that they figured out how to... Because I always wanted to grab a kick game of Valorant when the beta was happening, but I never had like half an hour to 40 minutes.
Yeah, it can be a long one. I do also like the length of a regular match because it's good at like getting in the heads of the opponent and figuring out what their plays are and trying to run it back and all that stuff. So yeah, I'm keeping up with that for sure. I know, Kata, you've been playing some still too.
Totally. Yeah, still waiting for the matchmaking to kind of self-correct over since they reset it at launch. But
yeah, definitely. All right. I think actually, given that, we should probably just wrap up. We'll try to get to a question bucket soon. But until then, as always, you can follow me on Twitter at Austin_Walker and follow everything we do at twitter.com/waypoint. Rob, where can people find you?
At Rob Zachney.
Kato.
At @A_Kato_appears.
And Gita.
At XOXOGossipGita.
Thank you, as always, to Bowen for letting us use the track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Find out more about that at waypoint.zone/BOEN. Is there anything on the site that people would like to shout out or that's coming up that people should know about or anything else that we should point people to?
Oh, I have an interview with one of the Mac makeup artists, Romero Jennings, that created the Mac makeup that came in the free update for The Sims. I know the fandom has had mixed reactions, but I think you'll really like if you dislike the makeup, learning about the process that it took to create something that is like a real physical product line and then bring the Mac brand and what Mac has been all about for like almost half a century now into The Sims. It was such a cool interview. That's awesome. And Romero Jennings is a really cool guy.
Cool. Go check that out. All right. And I know that we're going to have, can we say what the podcast is going to be on Friday, Rob? Do you know, is that allowed?
Yeah. I mean, the Last of Us 2 embargo is up on the 12th. So
there you go. So look forward to some impressions about that, then from some folks here. So, until then, as always, I feel like I'm missing a thing, but I'm not. I think I've done
did
all
you
the
say
things.
Bowen?
I did.
Hmm.
Oh, well.
Wow, disapproving note from Kata. Did you really, though?
Did you really? Waypoint.zone/BOEN in case I didn't.
You call that giving credit.
That was me. That was me.
That is sufficient to you.
That was me questioning my own memory in this moment.
Fair. You know what? Fair. On that note, we should get out of here. As always, fuck capitalism. Go home. Peace.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
But also get out in the streets.
But also please get out in the streets. Make some noise.
Yeah.
Well, the streets are our homes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
These are our streets.
The streets is our home. Yeah.
Whose streets? Our streets.
Thank you. That's what
unless it's like 2:30 in the morning and you're setting off fireworks in the street outside my house, in which case, like, maybe it's time to go home.
Whose street? Rob's street. Rob,
yeah.
Exactly. God. All right. It's very hard not to talk about the Clone Wars, Rob.
Oh, yeah.
In relation to all of this. It's very hard. That's the sound I make when I want to talk about a show that I can't talk about.
Every day I'm like,
every day
I want to talk about The Mentalist. Oh, yeah. I want to talk about Clone Wars.
Are you still in season 3 of The Mentalist? Or are you four? Okay.
Yeah. I'm trying to cut down on my TV time to make more room for games.
Okay. Fair. That's yeah. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Games are good. I like games. I like video games.
I just want more time.
I just need more time, fucker.
Yeah, Roy Batty ends a gaming binge. Oh no!
Roy Batty's heated gaming moments. Oh,
The Witcher? How long to beat? Oh no!
Oh god.
I want a skip list, fucker.
Oh. All those episodes lost. Tears great. Oh. Should I replay The Witcher? No, I shouldn't. I shouldn't. Anyway.
I saw the Almighty fall in Destiny.
Oh, we'll talk about that. When we come back, we'll talk about that. We have to talk about this. We actually have to. I know it's a bit. I know you're building.
Yeah.
But... I've seen things you people wouldn't believe. Yeah. God. I've seen Travis Scott in Fortnite. You know, this air conditioning thing sucks because now when it's not running, I'm out here like, ooh, it's feeling a little warm in my room. And it's not who I am.
Oh, no. Okay, so the thing
not
is,
who I am.
But you got to have that fan going.
It is. My fan's going. I can't have the fan in the air conditioning unit going because it's too loud.
Oh, so what are you using for fan?
I just have another fan.
Yeah.
And it's fine. It's fine.
Wait, is it another Vornado?
It's like an off-brand Vornado. I do have a Vornado, but I haven't unboxed it yet because I got the air conditioner. Gotcha. And I haven't really. I got to turn on the Vornado. But yeah, if I put on the fan, you would hear it. It would be bad.
Yeah. Okay, so I will. So I got this fan. It's a really nice oscillating fan. Moves a lot of air.
Okay.
It's also from a company that what it's known for is making fans for libraries.
Ooh.
Huh.
I like this thing is really quiet.
Okay. And
like whisper mode, it is dead silent. Like you can
hit
you,
me.
You
hit
you
me with that
running.
Recommendation. Yeah. Hit me. Hit
yeah.
Me with
yeah.
That,
yeah. Let me pull it up.
Link.
Oh, I wanted to recommend to both of you Supernova Era by Six and Lou, by the way. I just finished it. It's so great. Science fiction book, hard sci-fi. Supernova gives out radiation on the planet Earth that will kill everyone over the age of 13 in a year. And that's like the first quarter of the book.
Right.
The rest of the
you
book
mentioned
is
this. Yeah.
Children taking... Well, it got to the part where we've learned who America's president and secretary of state is. America's president is a perfect, perfect little boy who's the most handsome boy in the world, basically.
Wow.
And his parents are perfectly politically average. He just realized at a young age, like a lot of American children, that you have to like find an extraordinary opportunity and seize it unless you're if you don't want to be an average kid. And his opportunity was becoming the president. And then the Secretary of State is an evil little boy who does drugs.
Great.
He literally looks like a skeleton. Like, they describe him having paper white, thin skin that droops off his frame. He's like 12 years old. And then America immediately descends into children playing with guns.
Of course. Great.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yep.
Cool. And that's Supernova era, right?
Yes. It's shorter than most of his other books.
I was going to say, yeah. How does it? Yeah, yeah, yeah. The three body stuff.
How long to
breezy.
Be?
Yeah, it's a lot breezier. It reveals itself as an allegory about what we teach our children about our countries about halfway through. And from there, it just becomes quicker and quicker to read.
Gotcha. Cool.
Yeah.
I have seen Child Presidents.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a fucking car a block over that has an alarm that sounds like a fucking klaxon.
Oh, that's really annoying.
It's not good.
Car alarms are evil.
They are.
Not as evil as the fuckers who were setting off firecrackers, though, at 2:30 in the morning, like below my window.
No.
That's just rude.
Yeah, and they know that nobody's going to call the cops on them this week. But does that preclude me going out and kicking somebody's ass in the middle of the night? That's the thing. Like, full on, like, dude coming out in a bathrobe, being like, I'm gonna fuck you kids up if you stay there.
Please.
But what if the kids are big? There's the thing. What if there's
kids
many of
big.
Them?
Kids be big.
I see teenagers sometimes and I'm like, that is an adult. Then they're not adults. They're big, but small. Big of stature, small of age. I feel like my high school skewed smaller for some reason, because every other high school I've ever seen, like, everyone just looked larger and bigger. I feel like I knew a lot of very short people.
Weird. My high school's size demographics changed once it became a fad for rich dudes to start doing roids.
Love it. Great. Yeah.
It was awesome, dude. Like, junior year, suddenly a bunch of, like, unremarkable dudes suddenly just, like, got, like, fat with muscle in a year. And then started having a ton of behavioral issues.
Someday I'm gonna learn what the fuck is wrong with my camera and why it only works half the time and never when I need it to. Yeah. Okay, I'm ready though. I'm no camera.
I wonder if it's a Discord thing. Like,
no, it's with every app. It crashed opening the Logitech camera settings app just now. That's okay. What I was trying to open to see if it was Discord.
It was possible to,
yeah.
All right, let me start this recording.
You'll be proud to know I already opened time.is, though.
Perfect. Let's clap at 12 seconds.
Hold on, I gotta...
Oh, let's not clap at 12 seconds. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, well, okay. No wonder it sounds roomier. My gain is really high.
That makes sense. I was going to suggest
that. Hold on,
but
the thing is, the knob isn't. So did the Windows settings.
Yeah, Windows just aside.
Then Windows settings. We all know.
I saw
a bad
tweet. Do you want to know about it or no?
Wait, what?
I saw a bad tweet. Do you want to know about it or no? Michael Tracy, does that give you a... I saw.
Let me take out my headphones. You go ahead. Okay, well, then we're safe.
Yeah.
It's a really bad one.
It's a really bad one. He's so... It's JKR mascot bad.
Go ahead.
Yeah,
I'm taking my headphones out.
He just basically said that all black journalists have to do is say, I'm so tired, and then every media institution caves to your incessant, inscrutable demands. And, like, not only is that not true, if it was true, I'd be getting paid so much more. Can you imagine how much money I would get if all I had to do is say, I'm so tired? Come on! Yeah, it's not... How can you look at journalism of all institutions and say, too many black people get what they want?
All right. Rob, you ready?
Michael Tracy is just... Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, we can't. We all know. We all know.
I know. I hate him so much. Me I just too. Hate him.
5 seconds after.
Sure.
Okay.
World's Oceans Day.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice. I like the oceans.
I like the oceans. Good oceans. Let's protect our home.